Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today's guest is Bob Scanlon, play-by-play announcer and analyst for the San Diego Padres. But before we talk to Bob, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Today's guest is Padres broadcaster Bob Scanlon, who joins us from San Diego as the Giants are headed there for a three-game series after the Giants swept the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Padres ended up their series with the Rockies in very unusual fashion as the game with Colorado was postponed because of rain in July. I mean, that's just unheard of in California, but it did happen. So tell us, Bob, when was the last time that happened? It had to be surprising to everybody.
Joe, this has been absolutely bizarre. In fact, we're all wondering, when did we move to Tampa? Because we had thunderstorms yesterday, lightning, thunder, all that kind of stuff, and it just poured today. Two-hour rain delay. It has actually been 820 games since the last game was canceled here at Petco Park for rain. I mean, that's 9 years, 3 months, 15 days, but who's counting, right? So something different here every day.
Wow, that is different. And, you know, what has been different on the plus side for San Diego is that the Padres started to win some games. They had won four games in a row, and there was a lot of disappointment there after all the changes in the offseason. So is this team maybe ready to turn it around? I still see the NL West as pretty much being up for grabs. I mean, there's still a long way to go. What have you thought about it?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and you're absolutely right. This has been a complete, I don't want to say a total disappointment, but it's certainly a surprise that this team is where it's at this point, a record of 43-49 coming into today's ballgame. And, you know, this is not what they expected after all those exciting moves. Everybody, I think, would declare the Padres the winners of the offseason. But, Joe, how many times have we seen it where a team goes out, makes a bunch of moves, they all look good on paper, and they all are made for the right reasons, and they all look like they're going to make your team better and stronger and win more games, but it's not that easy. You've got to bring a lot of different personalities together. You've got to have the chemistry in the clubhouse. You've got to have guys knowing how they're going to play together. Some guys are going to be well. Some guys are going to be flameouts, and that's sort of been the situation here for the Padres, a little bit of all of that, I think, combining. And the thing that's been so frustrating, I think, is not only that the offense has not been as dynamic as they thought it would be after bringing in Upton, bringing in Kemp, bringing in Derek Norris, getting Will Myers, getting Will Middlebrooks, really overhauling the entire offense, but that they were able to do that without touching the starting pitching, which everybody assumed that they would have to do. And they figured, look, if you don't touch that starting pitching, it's going to be as solid as it was last year. Add to that all of these nice new offensive pieces, and you should have a team that's going to win a lot of games. And unfortunately, as you know, the offense has not done what it was expected to do. And to everybody's surprise, the pitching has not been as consistent as it was last year. So that's been, I don't want to say worrisome, but certainly something that maybe flying under the radar a little bit because so much of the focus has been on the offense.
We'll have more with Padres broadcaster Bob Scanlon right after this. Giants fans are settling for nothing but the best these days, so if you're in the market for buying or selling real estate in San Francisco, you'll want the A number one real estate agent. Well, at McGuire Real Estate, the top producer is Robert Merriman, and I encourage you to give him a call at 415-351-4698 or check him out at robertmerriman.com. Robert Merriman is opening doors for buyers and sellers in the city, and his excellent service is never discounted. Whether you're a buyer or seller in San Francisco, you need a creative negotiator on your team. Robert Merriman at McGuire Real Estate is the man for the job. Contact Robert at 415-351-4698. That's 415-351-4698. Or robertmerriman.com. Well, one of the players that came in this year, Justin Upton, has reportedly been on the trade block. And it was interesting today. He was pulled out of the game in the middle of the game before the game was postponed. And maybe a lot of people were speculating, did he get traded today? Well, that didn't happen. Apparently, he had a tight muscle somewhere. So, you know, tell us, how realistic is it that the Padres would trade Justin Upton?
That's a great question. And obviously, he's on the last year of his contract. when they first brought him over here, everybody in the front office, I talked to ownership, I talked to people in baseball operations, everybody said, look, the goal is not to bring Justin in here for just 1 year. The goal, the objective is to try to sign him to a long-term contract and for him to be a part of this organization going forward. Look, when you look at his numbers, he's been one of the most prolific hitters here at Petco Park since this ballpark has been open. So he's not a guy that's afraid to hit in what has been a traditionally pitcher-friendly ballpark. So there's a lot of reasons that you would want to keep him here, along with the fact that he's been playing great since joining the ball club. You know, that being said, the reality is he's a young player. He's got a chance to go into free agency, and there's every reason to think that he might want to test that market no matter what the Padres offer. So it puts the Padres in a situation of having to decide, you know, what can we get for him if we do need to trade him? Are we better off just trying to keep him for the remainder of the year, give him the qualifying offer at the end of the season, take the draft pick? And a lot of that, of course, depends on where this team is going. And they've won their last four games. So I think there's still an internal hope that this team is going to start to play the way they thought it was going to at the beginning of the season. And you have reason to keep Justin Upton because the team is playing well. And the objective is to get to the postseason. And you can't do it without having a big bat in the middle of your lineup. So it still remains to be seen. But certainly how this team plays over the next couple weeks may have a big factor in that.
Well, you know that the expectations are high when a manager gets fired in the first half of the season, and it's a manager that's respected around baseball big time in Bud Black. I mean, I was pretty surprised when I heard that news, but tell us about what Pat Murphy has brought to the table, a longtime college coach and now a major league manager.
You know, I think everybody's still trying to figure that out, including Pat Murphy to a certain extent, I think, Joe. As you just explained, he's been a longtime college coach at Notre Dame, ASU. When he was done doing his things at ASU, came over to the Padre organization, has been a minor league coach over here, has gotten nothing but rave reviews from all the guys that have played underneath him, most recently in AAA for the last few years. And so I think it was an interesting choice because he went from one extreme to the other, a guy who's been in baseball his entire life in Buddy Black, 9 years of major league managing experience, obviously 5 or 6 years, or 7 years actually, of pitching coach experience with the Angels. He'd won championships. So you go from one extreme to the other to a guy that had no big league experience and is trying to learn on the job. So I think everybody's sort of trying to figure out what is Pat Murphy's managing style? What will it be here at the big leagues? He is trying to figure out some things as well. Not only is he trying to figure out who are these players that he's inherited, but the rest of the league, the tendencies of the opposing manager, even how to use his own coaches. Remember, when you're in the minor leagues, you've got a pitching coach, and maybe you've got an infield coach, and that's about it, right? Now he's got a pitching coach. He's got a hitting coach, two of them, as a matter of fact. He's got bullpen coach. So he's managing a staff along with his players and trying to learn the league. It's a lot to take on, but he's hit the ground running. And so far, based on what we've seen over the last four games, you're hoping that things are starting to settle down in that clubhouse, settle down in the dugout, and that this team is starting to finally go in the right direction.
Well, even if you're a manager who knows Matt Kemp, you may not really know him because I think he's kind of a hard guy to figure out, especially in the first half of the season anywhere that he plays. I mean, he's a much better player in the second half for some reason, and certainly the Padres are hoping that's the case, that he plays better, and I know that he's been swinging it better lately. But what have you seen from him? Because he certainly hasn't lived up to the expectations. I mean, he does have 50 RBIs. That's not bad. But, you know, to hit in the 250s at this point, he's expected to do a lot more, hit a lot more home runs, and just do a lot more damage.
Yeah, no question about it. And there have been a couple of things going on. I think first and foremost that you're looking at a guy early on that was simply trying to put too much pressure on himself in terms of trying to be the man. I mean, it was no secret. He was the big cornerstone piece that the Padres brought in to try to turn this organization around, you know, bring in some offense, change the culture of the organization, bring in a guy that's been with the winning organization, bring in a guy that's been to the postseason, a guy that's supposed to be the leader. And I think that he took all of that to heart, which is good. It's not as though he was trying to shirk his responsibilities, but he's a human being. And I think he was just trying to maybe do a little bit too much. What we've seen now in the last 2 weeks, however, it's certainly, I'm seeing just from a pitcher's, you know, former pitcher's perspective, watching Matt Kemp hit, I'm seeing a guy that's much more balanced. I'm seeing a guy that's starting to cover the outside part of the plate, which he did not do in the first half of the season. They basically stayed away, away, away. It looked like he was trying to pull the ball, generate power, getting out on that front foot a little bit too much, and then the swing becoming very armsy at that point. What I'm seeing now is a guy that seems to have more confidence in allowing the ball to go a little bit deeper in the zone. He looks more balanced. He has been hitting everything over the last 12 games where he has 3 home runs, 5 doubles, and he's been swinging more like what you would expect Matt Kemp to swing like. He's turning on the fastball inside, and we've seen him hitting the off-speed pitch away as well. So hopefully he's starting to kick things in. And Joe, as you referenced, he's always been a pretty good second-half type of player. you look at the numbers last year, which was one of the things that the Padres really looked at in terms of, is this guy healthy? Can he get it done for us? Second half last year, he hit 309 with those 17 home runs. And I think they're hoping for that same type of production here in the second half of this season.
What about the reputation in the clubhouse? And I know that's a tough question because you're not in the clubhouse as a player. You're in there as a broadcaster. And we get asked this all the time in the media, like, oh, what's the mood in the clubhouse? It's kind of hard to tell, I think. But Kemp did have not the greatest reputation in Los Angeles. Do you think maybe he's cleaned that up a little bit? I mean, do the Padres players talk highly of him? What have you noticed about it?
Hey, all I can tell you is my perspective and what I see on a daily basis. You know, I'm in that clubhouse every day. I'm in there very early, 2 o'clock, 2:30 sometimes for a 7 o'clock game. And what I see is a guy that has just been nothing but upbeat the entire time, bringing a good energy to the ballpark. You know, I first saw it in spring training. Now, granted, it's a new team. Everything's honky-dory in spring training, right? But
yeah.
Just he was very interactive, very outgoing with every one of his teammates. I mean, really trying to make an effort to say, hey, we're in this thing together. We've got a lot of new guys here. Let's try to expedite this gelling process and get everybody on board and, let's interact and be a part of things. So I was really impressed right from the get-go. But, of course, we've seen that before, and you kind of wonder, like you said, well, what about the reputation that was coming out of Dodger Stadium? I've seen none of that, nothing negative whatsoever. Even during his biggest slumps over the last couple of months, I still see a guy that comes to the ballpark with a smile on his face. He's not, walking around like a sourpuss in any way. He's been upbeat. He's been interactive with his teammates. He's playing a great right field, playing his tail off. I mean, diving for balls in games where the Padres are behind by 5 or 6 runs and still putting his body on the line to make the play. So he's been nothing but exemplary in my opinion, both in terms of his effort on the field and everything that he can do, and also his attitude in the clubhouse. So it's been stellar, and no reason to think that it won't continue.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I always thought he was a really cool guy. Infrequent times that I've had a chance to talk to him, he seemed like a really cool guy. And sometimes you just get a label that sticks with you, and then you have to try to fight your way through that. A guy who has a good label on him is James Shields, because he's always been called Big Game James, and maybe that was knocked back a little bit in the World Series last year, but he has really pitched well for the Padres. Is he everything that the Padres wanted, and we're expecting them to see him in this series against the Giants, I believe, on Wednesday?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, he is pretty much as advertised, a guy that comes out and every single fifth day is going to keep you in the ballgame. He battles. Sometimes he has the great stuff. He has the nasty changeup going and the big 12-6 curveball and, cutting the ball in guys' hands, and he's, carving guys up. There's other games like his last outing where, quite frankly, he did not have any of that stuff, did not have good fastball command, was searching for the changeup, never really got a great feel for the curveball, and yet he lasted 5 innings and allowed only 1 run. And that's really what you expected out of him, is not that he's going to be blowing guys away every single game, but that he's got a toughness about him. He's got a veteran ability to keep his team in the ballgame even when he doesn't have his best stuff. And I think that is part of also the attitude that the Padres were hoping he would bring to this clubhouse in terms of, look, there's going to be days, guys, Tyson Ross, Andrew Cashner, the other young pitchers that might be around here, where you don't have your best stuff. Here is how you win on those days, and that's certainly something that he's been able to do.
More with former Major League pitcher and Padres broadcaster Bob Scanlon after this. Today's interview is being sponsored by Toscalito Tire and Automotive. You have to admit, collecting World Series titles is a new trend for the Giants, but at Toscalito Tire and Automotive, they've been winning since 1971 with quality tires and reliable auto and light truck repair at 6 Bay Area locations near you. Toscalito Tire and Automotive will take care of you like family, and they offer a nationwide guarantee backed by the strength of the Goodyear Tire and Service Network. And unlike watching close Giants games, going to Toscalito equals a stress-free life. No torture at Toscalito Tire and Automotive with 4 Marin locations, plus the Marina in San Francisco and Vallejo. Toscalito, more than just a tire store. Another pickup that really looked like it was going to be huge for the Padres was Craig Kimbrell, because at times with the Atlanta Braves, I would say most of the time, he looked like he was unhittable. And, maybe he's getting a bad rap because the ERA is high, but I think he's only blown one save, am I right? He has 25 saves. I mean, he's had a pretty good year as far as that's concerned, but is he a little bit more vulnerable? What have you noticed about Kimbrell, and what can we expect?
It's interesting because the guy's still throwing 98 miles an hour with a nasty curveball, and with that stuff, you expect him to be blowing everybody away every single outing, but you're absolutely right. There was a streak there after the first couple of weeks where he allowed runs, I think it was 9 of his 11 outings. Now, he didn't blow saves, But as you mentioned, he showed a little bit of vulnerability in terms of, look, it's not locked down all the time. There's going to be guys on base. There might be some runs scoring. That being said, he got the job done. And I think part of that also, remember, he was traded on the very last day of the season, that last day of spring training, right before the first game of the season. Another, you know, added another piece of the puzzle to this mix. You know, hey, I think it took him a little while to get adjusted, learn his new teammates, get used to the fact he's on a new ball club, along with all the dark cloud that started hanging over the team when it became apparent that Buddy might be on the hot seat. Guys were trying to do a little bit too much at that time as well. So all that being said, he seems to have gotten through that little rough period. He continues to shut the door down. I mean, last night he came in and, you know, blew the Rockies away, striking out three guys with absolutely no chance. So it's still the same Craig Kimbrel, and he seems to be getting himself back on track. And certainly anytime you've got a guy at the back end of that bullpen that can cap it down, it just keeps everybody else in their setup roles. Ben Juan in the eighth inning, Brandon Maurer's been the seventh inning guy, and you still have Thayer and Quackenbush and Kelly helping out the rest of the way. So, you know, but what's interesting, Joe, is trade deadline is coming up, and a lot of people have been asking who might be tradable from this ball club, and Craig Kimbrel is one of the names that continues to keep coming up.
Well, you know a lot about moving around to different teams. I mean, I was looking back on your career, being 9 years in the major leagues, the Cubs, Brewers, Tigers, Royals, Astros, back to the Brewers, Expos. You got traded a couple times, so you know what that's like. I mean, it must be difficult, and I don't think you ever got traded this time of year, but it's got to be hard when you're getting closer and closer to the trade deadline and wondering about it.
Yeah, it is in the back of your mind, no question about it. And I actually asked James Shields about this the other day, because when I was playing, we didn't have Twitter. We didn't have Facebook. We didn't have any of the social media stuff, right? And you still heard about it because there might be an article in a paper somewhere, or you've got a relative in New York. And, hey, you know, Bob, I know you're playing for the Cubs, but I saw your name mentioned in this article and, you know, here or out in California. So you would hear little things, but that was it. Nowadays, of course, every single rumor, whether it has any validity or not, is out there. You're hearing about it. They're reading about it. They're getting the tweets. So I think they're exposed to a lot more. And I asked James about that. I said, do you think it's more difficult now? And he said, you know, to a certain extent, yes, you hear about everything, but at the same time, it's almost overexposure where you hear about so many things that I think guys have actually become somewhat callous to it because, you know, look, there's 30 different rumors going out around out there, and the chances are none of them are going to happen. So maybe to a certain extent, guys are more callous than ever just because they're exposed to it so often.
Well, I saw that you were at one point in your career traded for Mitch Wild Thing Williams. In fact, you know, that's how he ended up. That's how he ended up going to the Philadelphia Phillies, right? I mean, because you went to the Chicago Cubs and you ended up being a good closer at one point for the Cubs. But Mitch Williams involved in that trade. When you get traded for somebody like that, it's got to be pretty interesting all the way around.
Yeah, no question about it. That was a surprise. I'd been with the Philly organization for 7 years up to that point, and actually the rumor started in spring training about there being a trade between the Phillies and the Cubs, you know, that the Phillies needed a closer at the time, and there was actually a scout by the name of Hugh Alexander who had been around baseball for a long, long time, and he'd been with the Philly organization, so he was familiar with me, and he had transitioned over to the Cubs organization. So when the Cubs started saying, hey, who do you know over in the Phillies that, you know, we might want to bring over, my name came up. So it was me and Chuck McElroy. And we heard three different times, the deal is going to happen. You know, it's going to happen tonight, so just sit tight. We'll let you know. And it would dissipate. It would just go away. And what I found out later was actually there was some dispute going on between the general managers of who wanted to break the news. And so one of the GMs broke it, and they were mad because they felt like the other guy was supposed to have whatever it was. It became an ego thing. So the trade was just absolutely put off. And they said, nope, we're done with it. And it was put to rest. And then all of a sudden, 10 days later, right about a day before the start of the season, boom. Hey, Bob, you know, I remember I was in my car driving up to Scranton-Wilkes-Barre to start the season off in AAA for the Phillies, and then my pitching coach calls up and says, hey, you just got traded to the Cubs, so it happened after all. but it was certainly a surprise at that time because you spend 7 years with an organization, you think you're going to be with them for life, but oftentimes those moves are a good thing because you get a fresh start, somebody else obviously wants you, and 2 weeks later, I finally got up to the big leagues for the first time with the Cubs organization, and I'm forever grateful to them for giving me that opportunity.
And after your playing career, you get into broadcasting, and I got to know you a little bit when you were doing the post-game show on television there in San Diego when I was with SiriusXM Satellite Radio, and since that time, you've moved into the booth as far as doing some play-by-play. So tell us about learning that part of the trade and, you know, being in on the game broadcast, because I think, you know, it's a perfect transition for a guy who was a pitcher or even a catcher. You guys are in on every pitch as a player. So now as a broadcaster, how much does that help?
You know, it's been really fun, Joe. And I, as you mentioned, I was doing the pregame and postgame for a while when you and I first met. And then to get the opportunity to transition to in-game, it's been fun. And the reason for it is because I really feel like the competitive juices start to flow again. When you're doing pregame and postgame, you're more analyzing and trying to figure out, okay, what video am I going to use after the game? How do I want to break down this play? What is the turning point? You're thinking more on a production-type basis for your TV production after the show. Right. Whereas in-game radio, you're just talking about the game. And you're trying to paint the picture. And you're trying to think along with that pitcher. What's he trying to do right now? What's this hitter trying to accomplish? What is the manager in each dugout thinking about right now? What matchup do they prefer to have? Are they going to go to lefty in the bullpen? But you know the other guy's going to pinch hit and bring up the righty. So there's all these things that sort of get you back into that game time excitement and adrenaline flow of, wow, he's got him set up perfectly for a slider right now. Go, make the pitch. Come on. Oh, no, he threw him a changeup right down the middle and he gets hit. So it's kind of fun in that respect, thinking along with the players and trying to anticipate what moves are going to be made. So it's been a lot of fun. I get a chance to do most of the color analyst work. Ted Leitner is my play-by-play partner during spring training. I get a chance to do some play-by-play as well, which is a tremendous amount of fun. So it's been a great experience, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity just to still be around this game and get a chance to talk about it on a nightly basis.
Yeah, Ted Leitner, he is one of the most entertaining broadcasters, and he actually, you could tell me if you agree with this, but he has the ability that you don't see very often, if ever, I think, in a major league broadcast to get serious, you know, call play-by-play perfectly, yet be able to really take things lightly and have fun with it and be hilarious at times, you know, in middle innings when you need that kind of thing. He really has a great sense of it.
He is so unique, and I don't know that there's anybody else in the game that can do what Ted does, and you're absolutely right. He has fun with the game. You know, you have to remember he also has the talk show background, so he has so many different topics that he can bring in and stories that he can reference. And yet, you don't lose track of the fact that you're at a baseball game, but you're listening to these great stories, and it all ends up tying back together to what's going on, and he never misses a pitch of what's going on in the ballgame. So it's a totally unique style, and quite frankly, I've heard, and Ted will tell you this, I mean, sometimes people, at first, they don't really get it at first, you know? I mean, it's like, wait, what's all these other topics and this entertainment, and I'm laughing, but I'm listening to a game. But after a while, you really come to appreciate what he's able to do and what he's able to bring to a broadcast in terms of the entertainment value, but also not compromising what you're listening to in terms of the call of a baseball game and never losing the main focus, which is the game that's going on the field. So it's tremendous to be able to work with Teddy and a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Well, look forward to seeing you sometime here in San Francisco. I'm glad that you set us up here for the series Giants and Padres coming up Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday here in San Diego. Thanks so much for the time, Bob.
Hey, it should be a great series, Joe. Always great talking baseball with you, and thanks for the time.
That's Padres broadcaster Bob Scanlon here on thesportsvirus.com. Coming up on Wednesday, we are scheduled to hear from former Giants shortstop Rich Aurelia, who is working for Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area these days. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.